Mr. Jenkins, whenever you're ready, you may begin.
May it please the court. We are here because the district court denied our client a preliminary injunction on what we believe to be an improper claim interpretation. We believe that it's well settled law from this court that when looking at the claim language, that the indefinite A cannot be restricted to a singular A. And concurrently, the indefinite D, as stated in Freedom Motion, is also an indefinite phrase and should not be restricted to one singular access.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Jenkins? A procedural question. Is this case proceeding on in the district court? Has it been stayed pending the disposition of this appeal, or where do we stand in the district court proceeding?
This case has been stayed pending this appeal.
Yeah.
In our initial filing, we noted that there were no related cases. Right. Subsequent to that time, a second court patent has issued, and an initial lawsuit has been filed against one of the defendants in this matter. So there is a related case in this matter. The claim terms, the specification, and the prosecution history clearly show that when the inventors used the term A-handle access, they were not limiting the access to one singular access. By definition, the limiting tool at issue here is a three-dimensional object. All three-dimensional objects have at least three axes, a longitudinal axis, a lateral axis, and a transverse axis. You merely pointed out a single axis at the beginning of the claim and later pointed out that the handle portion was pulled generally on the handle axis, which is further defined while maintaining engagement of the pedicated portion of the blade to engage the loose hair.
Mr. Jenkins, it seems to me that the claim construction that you are asserting would in effect provide that the handle portion could be moved in any direction.
That's correct.
Anywhere.
That is
sideways,
correct.
Up, down, no direction, no specific direction at all in effect.
That is correct, Your Honor. We did not limit the orientation of the handle axis in the specification. We did in the preferred embodiment to give the best mode of the invention, but we have not limited the orientation
Within the last clause of the claim, pulling the handle portion generally along the handle axis means, in effect, you can pull it anywhere.
As long as you are pulling the handle portion to pull the hair without cutting or removing the non-loose hair, which is also part of the claim.
But that doesn't seem to me to be a reasonable way to read this claim. That would read the claim in such a broad way that it essentially reads out of the claim any context, any significance to the handle axis itself.
The handle axis, Your Honor, as I just stated,
becomes irrelevant.
Well, no, because you need to pull the pet engageable portion along one of the many handle axes. At some point, to remove the loose hair without cutting or pulling the non-loose hair.
But if it's any axis, then it just means you need to pull it
in some direction.
In some direction.
Correct. And I don't think that reads a limitation out of the claim.
But how would you pull it along the handle axis, though? If the blade was not pulled along the axle, axis, how would you pull it? Sideways?
If you were to pull the blade so that it would not, one of the proffered examples by defendants is that you would pull it sideways, which would then pull, cut, and perhaps injure the handle. So that would not be a proper way to pull the handle. You have to identify the handle axis so that it will remove the hair without cutting and pulling it when it's used with the pedicatural portion on the pet.
So where did the district court go wrong in its interpretation of the claim at that point?
Well, because the district court said that a handle axis means a singular handle axis defined by the longest axis of the handle, or the elongated portion. What the district court has done as a further part of the claim construction, is if you read the handle portion generally along the handle access, the district court has read pulling the handle portion generally along the longitudinal handle access. That's imported into the claim, a limitation from the preferred embodiment that was set forth as simply for preferred embodiment.
As I read the court's determination, that's on finding 42 on page 31 of the opinion, it says, accordingly, this court construes the disputed phrase, pulling the handle portion generally along the handle axis, which is the last phrase of the claim, as applying force to the handle portion so as to cause or tend to cause motion towards the source of the force generally in the direction of the long axis of the handle. What is wrong with that?
At that portion, Your Honor, I believe the court was talking about the phrase pulling as opposed to handle axis. I may be incorrect.
Pulling the handle portion generally along the handle axis.
There was a dispute as to the term pulling as well, Your Honor. I believe there he was referencing, and I can pull it up if I need to, but I believe the court was referencing what the definition of pulling was. And our dispute there is whether pulling directly had to be through the longitudinal axis or pulling, whether it be like a rubber band or in the combing of a hair. As we talked about in the specification, there are combs and brushes. They're pulling a comb or a brush through the hair, such as the Intel product would be, would also constitute pulling. And I believe the section that you were looking at, Your Honor, was adapting a, what we also believe to be an improper term, construction for the term pulling.
Now, if I have a cat comb, you know what a cat comb is?
Yes.
Which pulls the loose hair from my cat. I'm not going to say whether I do or not because I don't want to be accused of infringing. But it pulls the loose hair, but it doesn't pull out or cut any of the hair that's attached to the cat. Why don't I infringe?
Well, I'd have to see the cat comb first in order to identify.
I'll describe it as it looks a lot like just a regular old comb.
Okay. Then,
and it has a handle section which goes along the top of the comb.
And I would answer that you do not infringe because if you read the specification, the actual patentable portion is defined as an 0-5 blade or the such.
It's not what the claim says.
It is not what the claim says, but you have defined it to mean by patentable portion in the specification. So a patentable portion has been defined in the specification to be a blade such as an 0-5 blade. So when you need that, would quickly and effectively remove the cat hair or dog hair, whatever you're talking about.
So you want to read the claim to include that limitation from the specification with respect to the comb, but you don't want to read the claim to include the axis limitation.
I think there's an important distinction in where both of those limitations are found. In the summary of the invention, the description of the invention, it is set forth what the patentable portion is and how the invention works. As this court has said, it's a broader area where you can look to and see exactly what it is that the inventor deemed as inventing. Whereas in the preferred embodiment, where we identified the longitudinal axis as the only axis, is in the preferred embodiment, and this court has said that you are not to limit the claims to the preferred embodiment. I would further go on to say that when reading this claim, at least two, at best, unbiased individuals understood this claim to include handle orientations such as the Intel handle orientation. The patent examiner cited hard against the porters with the handle orientation the same as Intel. The porters could have easily responded to the argument by saying that that is not correct because our handle orientation is different. They did not choose to do so. Additionally, when one of the defendants, Munchkin, was producing their product, they initially were going to have a handle orientation and the same orientation as Intel, and were afraid of infringement of the porter patent when reading the claim as it was and changed the description and the way that they made the product. So I think that when you look at those instances, this court's history of reading A to be more than one, and less specifically cited in the cases that they've decided for A meaning singular is easily distinguishable, that it's clear that the porters, in their invention and in their claims, claim a situation where you could have more than one.
Now, you rescued me from my infringement problem by saying that the specification has to inform the claim reading by limiting it to this, what did you say, the Oster blade?
Correct.
Now, the reference in the specification to the Oster blade maybe there's another one, but the one that I'm focusing on appears at column 2, line 41 at SEC.
I believe it says preferably a blade like the illustrated 5 blade. Is that correct?
Preferably.
Preferably.
And it says the PET engageable portion may consist of a one-piece blade for an electrical animal hair clipper, such as the Ostra blade. That suggests to me that it need not.
It need not be that specific blade, but it needs to be a blade that is comparable to that blade that quickly and effectively removes the hair without cutting or pulling the knot.
And if I told you that my cat comb is effectively does exactly that, then you would say I have an infringement problem.
I would certainly, well.
And if I told you that I bought the cat comb before 2000, you would have presumably an anticipation problem.
We certainly have problems on both of those issues, yes.
Okay. All right.
Obviously, if it was a comb that you made yourself, whether it was
I would, by hypothesis, I purchased it at a pet shop. All right.
As I stated, they've listed three cases in the brief, in situ form, Aptox, and North American vaccine. They're the only cases wherein this court has limited A to a single, to mean a single separate device. All of these are easily distinguishable. In situ form was argued against in the prosecution history, meaning they meant a single device. Aptox referred to a specific gas chamber, where the gas chamber was a single gas chamber being used in the invention. And North American vaccine was a situation where it was not the comprising term. Was a limiting term in the beginning. This court and our client relied upon the fact that for more than a handful of cases, all the other cases that we found, when the broad term comprising is used with A or AND, that means more than one, unless specifically limited by and would only be considered by somebody outside the inventors to mean that specific singular orientation in the situation of the axis.
Getting back to this axis again in the claim, if we accept your interpretation, then what meaning is there to the words generally along a handle axis that appear in two places in the claim?
Because generally along the handle axis is exactly that meaning. It is a axis, one of the many axes that is extended.
But if the axis can be any direction, then what does that add to the claim at all?
Well, it gives a further identification of what it is that they are claiming. When you talk about extending, which is another issue in this case as well, it's extending along that axis, and later on it is an axis.
But it doesn't matter, because it, according to your interpretation, it could be any axis.
As long as that axis is used to then engage the pet engageable portion, and pull along the axis with the pet engageable portion so as not to cut and remove the knotless hair.
Very well. Why don't we save the rest of your time for rebuttal? And we'll hear from, let's see, we have two counsel, is that right, who will be arguing?
Yes.
Now, you are Mr.
Kalaisi.
Mr. Kalaisi, and you're taking 7 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Why don't you go ahead?
May it please the court. Your Honor, if you agree with the district court, there's no infringement and there's no injunction and there's no dispute about that. If you take Furminator's construction, there's anticipation and there's no injunction. There's no dispute about that. That argument was waived. No matter what happens, the court made a specific finding that Furminator could not demonstrate irreparable harm as one of the factors on a preliminary injunction. Even if they were given a presumption, it was overcome and the finding was no irreparable harm and therefore no injunction. In fact, on all four of the factors here, the court found in favor of Ontel, and so there can be no injunction. So what we're asking to be done here is to affirm the court's decision of no preliminary injunction. But if we look at each of the elements here, though, with respect to the non-infringement, the court actually stated that the claim terms themselves define what handle axis means. And the claim terms being, of course, providing a grooming tool having an elongated handle portion extending generally along the handle axis. And elongate, extending, and along would have absolutely no meaning if it could be any axis. You would just, those words just come out of the claim. They have no meaning. They're superfluous. And we all know that words must have a meaning if they're in the claim. And it wouldn't only come out of this claim, but it would come out of, I think, every single of the 16 claims in the patent.
I suppose it would have been a little bit more clear if instead of saying an elongate handle portion extending generally along a handle axis, if it said a handle portion extending generally along an elongated handle axis.
Well, we could always rewrite the claims, but the words that are in the claims define what handle axis is. And if you look at the common meaning, which is
But isn't the way I just rewrote the claim the way the district court construed the claim?
Say it again, Ron.
Isn't the way I rewrote the claim, a handle portion extending generally along an elongate handle axis, essentially the way the district court construed the claim?
I think it is, and it also says the same thing.
So why would it be improper for me to rewrite the claim, but proper for the district court to rewrite the claim?
Well, the district court didn't rewrite the claim. The words, if you put in the understanding as you just did of the terms that are used, if you don't take out the words elongate and extend along, you have providing a grooming tool having a handle portion of more length than width that is stretched or spread out to greater or fullest length, generally in the direction of the axis defined by the longest dimension of the elongate handle. And that's how the court defined the terms that are in the patent. And so handle axis is defined by elongate, by extending, and by along. And the only way not to do that is you have to ignore those words to come to the conclusion that Furminator wants you to come to. And of course, if the shed end of the accused device is pulled along the longest dimension of the handle axis, it'll cut or be used in a sawing motion. But I think the most persuasive argument in favor of the claim construction that the court found is that the alternative construction results in frankly, an absurd reading of the patent. Because of the infinite number of possible axes, then you would have other claims affected. For example, claims 11 and 16 require teeth extending from the blade generally in a direction perpendicular to the handle axis. Likewise, claim 7 requires a blade's planar surfaces to be generally perpendicular to the handle axis. So if you read it, their interpretation in the context of the other claims, you have problems with those claims. They don't make sense. You can't start with a device that's generally perpendicular to, that has a blade that's generally perpendicular to an axis that can go in any direction. All of that being said, if you were to accept Furminator's claim construction, you end up with anticipation under 102 and 103. And
well, DOE is not part of this claim, though.
Pardon me?
Doctrine of equivalence has not been alleged.
No, it has not been alleged.
Let me ask you something. We get a lot of cases that come up here on the preliminary injunction stage, and at that point in time, the court is not really bound by its claim construction. It's really a preliminary claim construction. It can go back and be changed by the court. Do you think it's really worthwhile to review it for us at this point and issue a claim construction opinion?
I don't think the court needs to issue a claim construction opinion because there's so many different grounds by which the district court's decision can be upheld, all of which is in the record and none of which materially, none of the bases is in dispute.
Well, so the only issue before us is whether or not the court abused its discretion.
That's
in
correct.
Not issuing a PI.
Well, yes. I believe that's correct. The court does not have to, I mean, obviously it would be good to have the claim construction affirmed by the district court, but the preliminary injunction can be just a summary denial be upheld.
As a matter of policy, would it be worthwhile for us to issue a claim construction opinion at this point in time?
From your perspective, it depends on what we say, doesn't it?
it certainly does depend on what you say, but I this is one of those situations that no matter what happens, we ultimately win the case because the evidence is so clear on all the elements, whether you adopt the claim construction the district court has or whether you adopt Furminator's claim construction.
Well, but that, assuming that the district court does not do, as Judge Gallarza has suggested, something that the court is entirely free to do, which would be to change the claim construction.
Yes.
So it, presumably, I mean, it seems to me your answer to Judge Gallarza's question probably should be, we would love to have a claim construction affirmance at this point, locking the district court in. Whether that's proper for us to do or not is another matter.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. Finally, just to very quickly point out, the validity argument was waived, the claim differentiation argument was waived, and the issue of trying to read in quick and effective into the claims was also waived. That, all that being said, even if you looked at those arguments, I think the record is clear and complete with evidence that demonstrates that those arguments are easily overcome, and so the result remains the same, that the preliminary injunction was properly denied below. And I'm out of time.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Calaisi. Mr. Grady, we'll hear from you next.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Munchkin respectfully requests that the Court affirm the District Court's denial of the Furminator's preliminary injunction motion for three reasons. Number one, the Munchkin device does not infringe any of the asserted claims of the Porter patent. The Munchkin device, it is like your CAD-COM, Judge Bryson. It doesn't have it's held like this. It doesn't have an elongated handle portion that extends generally along an elongated handle axis. This is the Furminator prototype, and this is what the Porters invented. It was, to the extent they invented anything, we don't think they did. We think the patent's invalid. But what they did was they took an Oster A 40 blade and stuck it on the end of a comb or brush or a hairdryer handle, can't remember which one, and attached it up at the top and provided an elongated handle portion. The reason they did this is set forth in the specification of the patent. The patent indicates that in the prior art, pet groomers were using these A40 blades like this with some tape wrapped around the edge of the blade to groom pets because they found that these Oster A40 blades worked well to remove the non-loose hair from the pet while, or I'm sorry, remove the loose hair from the pet while leaving the non-loose hair. I don't seem to have that problem, but some of the pets did. And so in any event, that by using this taping method, the groomers could get their job done well. But there was a problem with it. It caused their hands to become sore, and it was difficult to hold on to, difficult to grip. So the idea was to provide a handle portion that provided a biomechanical advantage to the groomers so they could do their jobs easier, and it wouldn't hurt their hands so much to hold on to this elongated handle portion of the device. So that was the motivating idea behind this patent, to the extent that it's patentable at all. I want to address also the fact that in addition to there being no grounds for finding that this Munchkin device has anything that could be considered an elongated handle, that the record below, there were substantial questions of validity raised in the record below. If we construe the claims the way the district court, if this court affirms the district court's construction, and in answer to Judge Gallarza's question, my client would like this court to issue a claim construction ruling and affirm the district court's claim construction ruling. We think it would be entirely appropriate at this time. This matter was litigated hot and heavy in the district court. A lot of briefs filed. Witnesses were presented. There was a one-day hearing. There was expert testimony. The district court issued a thorough, well-reasoned, carefully considered opinion, made multiple findings of fact, multiple conclusions of law. This was not some kind of off-the-cuff construction of well, I just don't think it infringes kind of a thing. We went through a very orderly process here. Lots of briefs filed in the district court. District court had ample opportunity to consider all of these factors. Came to the right conclusion. We think it should be affirmed. We think the claim construction is right.
Have motions for summary judgment been filed in this case?
No, Your Honor.
No. So even the motion, I understand that the case has stayed, but even the motions have not been filed.
Yes, it proceeded solely on a motion for preliminary injunction.
I mean, sometimes what we get, and you're exactly right, I think, in your characterization, we get everything in the preliminary injunction setting from the off-the-cuff, sort of almost a TRO type ruling, all the way to what amounts to a summary judgment ruling in which the parties are looking for a quick appeal, and they call it preliminary injunction, but it really is the summary judgment proceeding. You seem to be saying that this falls closer to the latter than the former, at least in your view.
I would say it would go beyond the latter, the summary judgment. I got confused on the former and the latter. I'd say it would have been like a fully briefed summary judgment motion with testimony.
Right.
That's how it was.
Okay, well, that's right.
You would have affidavits
as opposed to live testimony.
And we had live testimony as well in the district court. And with respect to the live testimony on the issue of Munchkin's infringement, I want to point out that there was testimony at the preliminary injunction hearing from an expert, Pat Groomer, who testified that the Munchkin device did not have an elongated handle. The district court made a factual finding to this effect that the Munchkin device does not have an elongated handle. It doesn't have a handle at all. In fact, I'd like to point out that the Furminator has referred to the fact that Munchkin's executive vice president of product development considered various orientations of the Munchkin product, one of which had a handle on it. And that's reflected in the record at page A2576 to A2577. There was a deposition of Mr. Haverhill was taken, and counsel for the appellant said, why did you take the handle off your prototype? And our vice president, Mr. Haverhill, said, because we reviewed the patent, and we didn't want to have any grounds for anybody to allege that we infringed the patent, so we took the handle off. So that the drawing of the tool with the handle appears on A1686. But that testimony is at A2576, and I think it's just A2576.
Mm-hmm.
The expert testimony in this case is that this product has what's called a grip, not a handle. And the way it's used is like the way the grips were used with the Oster A40 blades that were twisted around, taped around the A40 blades that were removed from the clippers. It's used in the same orientation. The district court made a factual finding to that effect, and that's factual finding number 20, I believe. And the district court specifically found that the manner in which the bamboo Munchkin device is used is the same as the way it was used in the prior art. With regard to the multiple plural issues, to the extent that's relevant, we think the claim language defines what the handle axis is, what the elongated handle is, and what the district court did was look at the plain meaning of those terms and phrases and confirm what that plain meaning was by looking at the specification. The specification provides, actually, on page, column 2, it describes the grooming tool of the present invention. It doesn't say a preferred. It's under the description of the preferred embodiment, but it is describing what's called the grooming tool of the present invention. That's column 2, lines 25 through 27, and it goes on to describe an elongated handle portion extending generally along handle axis X. That's at column 2, lines 30 through 33 of the patent. So you can see it wasn't in this language where the patentee was talking about, well, preferably it should be this way or preferably it should be that way. This is what the patentee described as the invention. I see my time is up. if I might conclude just by saying we respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's ruling and find no abuse of discretion in the denial of the motion for preliminary injunction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grady. Mr. Jenkins, you have, let's see, about two and a half minutes.
Addressing some of the arguments quickly, as to irreparable harm, public policy, and the hardship, I believe once the district court came up with what we believe to be an improper claim construction and found no infringement, though all those factors immediately swayed in advantage of the defendants, he did not go through a proper analysis on the remainder of those factors. He simply stated that since there was no likelihood of success on the merits because there was no infringement, that we don't need to reach those other factors. I think it is clear for irreparable harm, which would be both presumed in an instance of this infringement of a valid patent, and also on defendants' attempt to dump on the market a lower price product, that would affect our irreparable harm, balance of the hardships. We are a small company that sells this tool as truly a mom-and-pop corporation that is trying to grow this tool.
Do you think after eBay that irreparable harm can be presumed?
I think in the context of a preliminary injunction where you have two competitors who are competing in the same marketplace attempting to sell the same product to the same people, but yes, I think after eBay you can still have a situation where it can be presumed. It's not a situation where nobody's making a product and you don't have two people competing. I think that the presumption is still there when you have a valid patent of two competitors selling in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
As to the munching device, you know, the handle was described as being elongated. This is the portion of the device that you hold in your hand. It's the handle. This device is longer lengthwise than in width. That's elongate. Those are the simple definitions of elongate that are used in the claim and that should be used in interpreting the claim. As to waiving our validity argument, we have a patent that is presumed valid. We do not believe that it was our burden to come before this court and argue that our patent is valid. We have a presumed patent that is valid. We do not believe that there has been a strong enough charge to warrant invalidity of our patent. And as such, if any modification of the court's order dealing with invalidity towards the patent was to be raised, it would have needed to be raised in a cross-appeal by the defendants, which was not. On those basis, with a proper claim construction, we believe that the district court's claim construction should be altered and that the preliminary injunction actually should be granted.
Very well. Thank you. The case is submitted. Thank both, all three counsel.